At Vecna Robotics, we provide the forklift drivers that you can't hire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. We're glad you're here and thank you for subscribing. I am Jim Beretta, and our guest for this podcast edition is Daniel Theobald. And Daniel is the Chief Innovation Officer and founder of Vecna Robotics, flexible, intelligent material handling automation company. Daniel has decades of experience leading research scientists and teams of engineers in developing cutting-edge technology. He has 67 issued patents and more than 30 patents pending. Daniel has been on the forefront of robotics for more than 20 years, working closely with DARPA, the DoD, NASA, NIH, USDA, and many others to advance the use of robots and AI software to improve supply chain automation. In addition to founding Vecna Robotics, Daniel also co-founded Mass Robotics, a nonprofit dedicated to the global advancement in the robotics industry. Daniel's dedicated to the idea that technology can be used to empower people worldwide to live more fulfilling lives. Hey, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about what's going on in the industry from a high level at Vecna. Again, we know what Vecna does, but what are some of those trends?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a few years ago, this idea of using autonomous systems in warehouses was sort of revolutionary, you know, crazy idea that, few had actually tried. And what we're seeing now, of course, is that there's a realization that the industry cannot survive without it. It's not some cool, you know, futuristic thing. It's vital to the survival and growth of the industry.
So what does a Vecna robot look like?
Well, it largely looks like a normal forklift or tow tractor, as they're called, in warehouses. Many materials are moved around on pallets. You know, a pallet can be made of wood or plastic. Most people have seen a pallet. It's kind of the way that the economy moves things, from the time they're manufactured all the way to eventually ending up on somebody's doorstep. Stuff has to move. It needs to be moved around. And pallets sort of became a de facto industry standard for how things are moved. A forklift is a machine specifically designed to move those pallets efficiently. And there's a whole bunch of different kinds of forklifts. But our products look like standard forklifts, except the one curious thing is they move without a human driver operating them. They're smart enough to get from point A to point B reliably and safely. That really is filling a big gap in the industry right now because it is incredibly difficult to find forklift operators, like many roles.
And tell us a little bit about that, selling forklift robots to manufacturing. Is this a hard thing now? Is there still a big cultural challenge, or what's happening that way?
Well, it's evolving very quickly. Because of this increased demand from the, just what's going on in the labor markets in the industry, pretty much everybody realizes that they have to automate now. And so we're all in this learning curve of how to adopt the technology in the most efficient way. So people are learning very quickly. You have a mix of, people who have been working in the industry for many, many years, and this idea of bringing in technology is kind of a new thing. But now you've got a lot of people, who are just starting their careers and are really, grew up with technology entering the industry as well. So it's a mix, but I think the adoption now is very strong because it's inevitable, right? People realize it's inevitable. And they realize that they have to do it in order to have their business be competitive in this new global economy.
So tell us a little bit about Mass Robotics and what your role is there.
Yeah, it's really fun to see how Mass Robotics has come about and evolved. When I founded Vecna Robotics many years ago, I founded it on this concept that people ultimately are what matters. It's a robotics company. We build robots, and a lot of times people think of robots as being sort of anti-people, but that's actually not true. To put a fine point on it, our approach has always been that we are building robots to make life better for people here on this planet. And one of the things that Vecna Robotics did from day one was pay our employees to spend 10% of their work week doing community service, giving back to the world. And myself and a few of my colleagues at Vecna Robotics identified a need in the industry. We felt like there was some real challenges for new startups in robotics. It was really difficult to be successful as a robotics startup. And so we decided to use our community service hours to found this organization with the goal of helping to move the industry forward, to help startups have the resources, have the information, have access to investors, have access to end customers in a way to help them be successful, to help really foster and educate the next generation of engineering talent through STEM initiatives, and to help the industry through creation of practical interoperability standards. And I'm really proud of the work that Mass Robotics has done in all of those areas over the years. So it's had a really big impact, really helped the industry to move forward. And I'm excited to say that we're really just getting started.
So this idea of interoperability is really, really interesting. And so how did we get here?
Well, you know, it's just the normal progression, I think, of any industry, any new industry. It starts out sort of like the Wild West, you know. You've got innovative, creative people who are saying, hey, we could do something new. Let's try this. And, you know, most of the time those things fail, but every now and then they're successful, and that spawns, can spawn a new industry like the modern robotics industry. But, you know, early on in those industries, everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And that's great because that produces a lot of innovation, a lot of new ideas, a lot of exploration of different ways to do things. But at some point, it starts to become an impediment to growth of the industry if everybody's doing things their own way. So, we kind of took a look at some other industries, how they had evolved. And one thing that became very clear was one of the signs of a mature industry is interoperability standards, right? You can't imagine going and buying a cell phone and these days and not being able to run software from, you know, any number of software developers, right? It used to be that your cell phone only ran software from the company that actually built the cell phone. You know, that was really holding the industry back. And when we start to get this idea of here's an operating system and anyone can write a really great app for that, anyone can download that app, that's when the industry really exploded. And this is what we're trying to help do for the robotics industry. Right now in the robotics industry, by and large, you can only run software from the company that actually physically built the robots on those robots. And that is holding the industry back. Those robots typically don't share information with other robots from other vendors. And so we need to get past all that. And so interoperability is this idea that we need to start sharing information. We need to have robots from company A be able to share space with, interact with, robots from company B. And you can't do that without some kind of standard, some kind of way to communicate. So that was kind of the genesis of the initiative.
Now, I think it's a very exciting conversation. So how do we fix it? And what are some of the company's motivations, say, like company B? What are some of their motivations?
Well, it's interesting because when Mass Robotics first started to socialize the idea of interoperability in the robotics industry, there was actually quite a bit of pushback. And most of that pushback was from robotics companies who, oftentimes, I think perhaps naively, and again, this is the same of any industry, they feel like, you know, they've got the best solution in the world and everybody's going to use their stuff and they're going to own it all. And that's just not the way mature industries work, right? For an industry to be successful, there needs to be many companies supporting that industry, supporting those customers. Customers need to have choices. They need to be able to go out and find the solutions that make the most sense for their facilities. The early on reaction is, oh, we don't want interoperability standards because, you know, we'd have to give up some kind of secret sauce, or we'd have to play nicely with our competitors. And, we kind of just pushed through that. It was something where I think once people started to realize that, yeah, mass robotics was going to make this happen, and yes, it is good for the industry, then I think it switched from a attitude of, let's not participate. Let's try and impede this from happening to, wow, we better get on board or we're going to miss out.
Yeah. And that's the interesting part about that. Some of the cultural motivations in the robotics industry, because you're right, there's people out there going, maybe selling a product that they might not be able to sell in the future because they are now on this new standard. So how does some of the cultural motivations, how does it fit into this, do you think?
Yeah, I would say that typically people might think that they might not be able to sell their product in the future because of the standard. But I'd say in practice, that's almost never true. And almost all the time, it actually helps them. There are a number of companies out there that provide middleware, I'm air quoting, middleware solutions for robotics, for example. They may think, oh, well, once there's an interoperability standard, then, everybody can just talk directly to each other and they don't need the middleware. And that's actually not true at all. As a matter of fact, when you have a middleware provider that conforms to the standard, they're going to get a lot of business because there's so many services that need to be provided there in the middle. Big end users, they're not going to write this software themselves. They need a trusted partner to help them with that. The motivations, like in anything, are evolving pretty quickly, but it all comes down to the end customer, right? The end customer is the one who votes with their pocketbook. They choose whether or not the standard is going to be successful by when they choose a vendor for a project. One of the things that many, many of them are asking for now is, does your product conform to the mass robotics interoperability standard? And why that's important to us is because, we've already written some listeners that will, keep track of where all the robots are for us and create a dashboard for us so that we know what's going on. Or, even better, we've got these workflows where we need the robots to be somewhat coordinated, right? There's a certain amount of floor space in a facility. And if you have a floor cleaning robot, for example, that's trying to clean the floor at the exact same time that the forklift robot needs to get through to deliver a critical shipment to, loading dock C, you've got problems if none of those systems are able to talk to each other.
Daniel, have you put a cost on this to the industry? Like, this must be a huge cost, the interoperability opportunity cost.
Well, it's a great question, and we haven't formally done that study. But I would easily estimate that there are billions at stake here, because you think about the physical economy, and like I was saying earlier, the entire physical economy is this idea of moving things from point A to point B. You start at a manufacturer, eventually it gets to a customer's doorstep. Or I should say you start from raw materials, right? And goes to a manufacturer, eventually you get to a customer's doorstep. And there's just lots of steps there in between. Right now, as an industry, we do some pretty incredible things, right? This unrealistic consumer expectation that they should be able to order something online, now customized to their, tastes, and have it show up on their, on their doorstep within days or even hours sometimes is crazy. But what we're failing at so far is doing that in a energy efficient, ecologically sustainable way. We just have lots of stuff moving around, and so much of it is uncoordinated. Here at my farm in San Gregorio, California, I probably get 4 or 5 different deliveries a day, oftentimes. Very, very inefficient, right? Because we're not that close to anything. So I think there's just massive opportunities for better coordination of the whole supply chain, which will significantly reduce costs. It'll significantly reduce environmental impacts. And it will make a big difference in cost as well. There's just a massive opportunity here that just a little bit more information sharing can help to solve. So I'm really excited about that.
So Daniel, how do you actually do this, like invent a standard?
that's a great question because there's a lot of debate about this. As a matter of fact, one of the big objections early on to the work we were doing at Mass Robotics with this standard was that we were trying to do it too fast. That standards take years to create. And, that has been true traditionally. But what we've seen in engineering, software engineering, even hardware engineering, is the shift towards a process we call agile. Agile is this idea that you are moving much more quickly. It's more of an iterative process. You don't try and, boil the ocean in a sense, but you take a little bite, you work on that, you make progress on that, you release that, and then you take your next bite rather than trying to have some massive software release. And what we've found in the engineering world is that just works so much better than, working on one thing for a long, long, long time and then eventually releasing it. So we wanted to bring this idea of rapid iterations of agile to the standards development world. And the reason that that's so critical is because technology is changing faster and faster and faster. For electrical code, 220 volt power or whatever. Yeah, those things aren't changing as quickly. But when you talk about software and AI and robotics, those things are changing every day. The rate of change is so fast that if the standard development process is taking years, by the time the standard comes out, it's probably essentially completely irrelevant at that point. So we realized it was critical that we supercharge that process, that we adopt the same techniques in engineering that we're allowing engineering to be successful for standards development. And so we just sort of pulled in a group of people from the industry, from a number of different companies, end users and robotics vendors, and got them in a room and said, hey, there's a problem. Here's the challenge. We need to come up with a practical solution, but let's keep it simple. Let's not try and think of every possible, problem or application. Let's not try and solve everything right now. Let's just focus on one very concrete thing that we can do to help the industry move forward. Let's get that done very quickly and get it out there. And then we'll get this feedback loop going. And so that's what we did. And it seems to be working very well.
Daniel, thanks for joining me for this really fascinating conversation. Is there anything that we've forgotten to talk about yet today?
Well, I think the only other thing I'd mention is that this is a community effort and everybody can contribute. So if you have any interest in helping the robotics industry move forward, if you have any interest in helping to develop this next generation of standards for robotics that are obviously going to have a big impact on our society, please get involved. Reach out to me. I'm easily contactable through LinkedIn, or you can contact me, theo@massrobotics.com. We'd love to get you involved. Everyone is welcome to contribute, and we appreciate everyone who helps.
And when you're not rewriting standards and selling forklift robots, what do you like to do?
I have a number of different projects where we are trying to help different industries move forward with robotics. So out here at my farm, research farm in San Gregorio, we're actually releasing an open source farming robot, free for anyone to download plans and build their own. We're hoping that can help farmers around the world be able to grow healthy food locally in a cost-effective way. Also, started a consulting company called Mechable.com, which is all about helping large end users of automation, or those who need automation, sort of navigate this crazy complex world of mechanization and automation, and you know, try and figure out how to chart the best path for their particular organization.
Thank you. And I'll put these websites and such in the show notes. So if you're listening and you're out jogging or whatever, we'll put them in the show notes so you can get them. Again, thank you so much for spending some time. And I'd like to connect up again and we can talk more about Mass Robotics and some of the other projects that you're into.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. And Earhart is E-H-R-H-A-R-D-T. And I'd like to thank A3, they're the Association for Advancing Automation. They are the leading automation trade association for robotics, vision and imaging, motion control and motors, and the industrial artificial intelligent technologies. Visit automate.org to learn more. And I'd like to thank our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO, digital, social marketing, and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And you can find them at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to recognize my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Jeffrey for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our partners, A3, Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.